This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network.
The show that wonders where its $180
is. The show that enjoys a nice game of hacky sack from time to time.
The show that is today brought to you by the letter O. The show that follows with complete and thorough prophylaxis.
The show that acts as a social lubricant.
The show that welcomes all voices, disembodied or otherwise.
It's a very different dynamic, this whole sex with a condom thing.
If you stick around long enough, you'll see the abrasiveness begins with the sodomite.
Most conferences that you go to with people in a room sitting in chairs and...
Do they have nudity?
No, unfortunately.
Nudity.
Awesome. The brief synopsis is about a group of about a dozen or so aborted fetuses who come back to life.
It's just that you've mentioned bacon so many times tonight in so many situations where I never thought bacon would come
up. This is going to be the best podcast ever.
This is Rusty, and I'm here with Amber and Andy Ditzler with iDrum. Now, you're a volunteer, right?
Yeah, iDrum is all volunteer. So everyone working there is working there on a volunteer basis. My role there now is not a board member, which I used to be, but what I do there now is simply program a film series, which takes place mostly at iDrum, called Film Love. And it happens once a month or so there. So that's what I do there now, and give the occasional music performance there, and have volunteered in the past for other duties such as being on the board and working at events and things like that.
And the thing I found sort of interesting about iDrum is that it seems to be very orderly, slick kind of thing where things get done in a pretty organized way, but there's also not like a clear hierarchy where you go to one person to get X done or you go to one person to get Y done. How does that work?
I'm kind of amazed that it works that way. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Well, me too. I mean, I'm continually amazed at what happens at iDrum, the amount of stuff that gets done there. Which is just a matter of sheer commitment on the part of the people. Because, as I say, it's all volunteer. And so when things happen, it's because one person or a small group of people within iDrum are really sort of hot to do it and taking on that responsibility and just sort of marshaling the forces to get it done. iDrum, there is no hierarchy at iDrum, you're correct. There are some committees, so there's a smaller group of people working on, say, the art shows, working on film and video, working on music, and then they bring that to the larger group and say, okay, we're doing this, this, and this. There's a lot of coordination that needs to be done among those various places because they share the space. There's a lot of communication that has to happen. As you might imagine, it's not always the smoothest thing. But that makes it all the more amazing. The amount of things that get done there do get done.
Out of all the shows that people propose for iDrum, how many actually end up making it in there?
That's a good question. I don't know that I really could tell you. There are shows that are pitched that don't happen for, of course, all kinds of reasons. I think probably most commonly is the reason that iDrum's already booked up at the time that someone wants to do something. The amount of things that happen there has only increased, and it gets booked up further in advance because it's such a sort of a flashpoint for arts of all kinds. It's particularly unclassifiable events, right? Which they specialize in and which there are so few places to do them. And so those things are just sort of drawn into iDrum, and it happens, I see it happening more and more and more quickly, further in advance as time goes on. So that's a big factor. a lot of events in that way are sort of ephemeral, sort of spontaneous, okay? And so that's a challenge to put them in at the last minute now more than ever before. As for other reasons, you know, I think there are some events that are pitched that maybe just aren't maybe right for the aesthetic of iDrum. I mean, it's extremely wide-ranging, but on the other hand, there is an iDrum aesthetic, I think, in terms of programming. But I think really it has to do right now with the fact that there's just so much going on already.
One of the things you just mentioned is having trouble with, there's so many things that go through iDrum now, and it's only getting more and more exposure, and more and more people are seeing it. Do you view that as something that could theoretically just make it harder to operate a place with obscure things?
No, I actually don't. Because, you know, the energy that's at iDrum is drawn so much from the inspiration that comes mm-hmm. from the sheer activity of the place mm-hmm. and the response that they get from simply being open and having the doors open X number of nights a week. And so the energy that they draw from that, I think, is really greater than any disadvantage I see. At least that was my experience mm-hmm. when I was there. It's not easy by any means. And, you know, there are a lot of challenges with a place like iDrum, although I found very few, if any, places like iDrum. But I would say that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely seems to be a very unique place. And I mean, I think of iDrum as somewhere where there will be events that, you know, other places might not touch, mm-hmm. you know, because they might be controversial for one reason or another. And it's great that there's a place where these things can actually happen, because yeah. the stuff that's controversial is usually the stuff that's interesting and gets dialogue going. Everything.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of too many other venues locally that would host the Sex Workers Art Show, for example.
Correct.
Which we've been to for 2 years.
Yeah.
That was actually the first time I ever went to iDrum was when I saw the Sex Workers Art Show. Moving on to your project, The Summer of Love Films. What was the original inspiration for putting these things together?
Well, of course, there's the Summer of Love exhibition going on at the Whitney Museum in New York right now. That's a traveling exhibition which originated, I think, a few years ago at Tate Liverpool. But before that, you know, I was researching a lot of experimental films and came across these particular films I'm showing in a number of places, whether they were old programs at the Whitney or at other places. Whitney has a fabulous film program. So I've been carrying these films around in my head for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in some cases, without the proper context really to show them. And it occurred to me in a conversation that here we are in 2007, Summer of Love was 40 years ago, someone mentioned this, and I thought, oh, I can't believe I didn't think of a film program to put together. And it happened very quickly. I usually put lots and lots of research into the film programs that mm-hmm. I do. One of the reasons for that is that the kind of films I deal with are not available generally on DVD. I can't really see them ahead of time. So in programming, you still want to know what you're showing. Mm-hmm. And so you're tracking down old journal articles, obscure references, things on the net, and takes pretty time consuming for most of the programs. With these films, I had done all that years ago, and I'm just carrying them around in my head, and so it came together very quickly. So the inspiration is simply that they're films, as usual, that I want to see and haven't been able to see yet, and now here's a context.
What? Could you describe some of the films you'll be playing this Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I've got 9 or 10 short films playing on Saturday. It's Saturday, July the 21st, at iDrum, 8 o'clock p.m. The title of the program is Summer of Love. And it's a kind of curating that I don't often get to do, but I really enjoy it when it works, which I guess what I'm talking about is the chance to put together a number of different kind of films on the same program. So we have films that are what you would call, I suppose, art films, or films as visual art. Mm-hmm. So Judd Yockut's film, Turn, 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 which is very much a film that was created using, well, not only is it an artwork itself, but it is a film of other artworks, particularly light works, including the works of the great early video artist Nam June Paik. So it's a very abstract film. It's a piece of visual art in and of itself, and yet it happens in time, like film does. So it's different than going into a gallery and watching something on a monitor. So that particular kind of film is playing. It's juxtaposed against a couple of anti-war protest films, one of which is David Ringo's film March on the Pentagon, made in October 67. During a large-scale protest at the Pentagon. And then Lenny Lipton's film, We Shall March Again, actually made in 65 in Berkeley, but I'm including it just as kind of an early example of something that came to define Summer of Love, which is these anti-war protests and the conflict around them. In addition to those things, we have Bob Cowan's film Rock Flow, which is one of the real finds for me on the program. It it has the Chambers Brothers, rock band at the time, playing in the midnight hour. That's the soundtrack. And then the soundtrack for the second half is extremely abstract, sort of noise, but also very beautiful. But the first half of this is just a catalog of 67 fashion, like high fashion. People with green striped pants, dancing in discos, just wonderful color, wonderful shots, and you know, the rock music is playing, and it's just edited together really fabulously. So so that's just a sort of a peek into the sort of the fun, sort of fashionable part of 67. And then juxtaposed with that, I've got a film like Touching by Paul Sheretz. It's the kind of film that's not often played in these sort of Summer of Love programs, because it's there's a real undercurrent of violence, or actually this film itself has violence as a subject, but it's sort of meant to sort of suggest the undercurrent of violence that was going on in 67, because not only was there this sort of peace and love thing going on, but also it was a time when people were faced with very difficult circumstances, tough decisions, and a war going on, which was very much on people's mind and in people's homes on the televisions. And so all these different kinds of films that I get to show all in the same program that give sort of a visceral overview is really it's a really good opportunity. So I like the program.
I'm sort of interested in the undertones of violence, the latter film there. The film I always think of from that era, and it's, I guess it's a little after The Summer of Love, is the Rolling Stones' Altamont film.
Gimme Shelter.
Yeah, Gimme Shelter at the end of it. How is that similar or different to Gimme Shelter as far as sort of trying to demonstrate the undertones of violence at the time?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I would say it's an interesting comparison to make. They're totally different films. Mm-hmm. Gimme Shelter, of course, does document sort of the very downside of the 60s, yeah. Right? The film Touching is by Paul Sheretz. Paul Sheretz was a very unique film artist, an early practitioner of what later came to be called structural film. And all that means is that the film, it's a film that's very obviously broken up into units, and you experience sort of the structure, the way the film is structured, is a part of your experience of the film. What Paul Sheretz is doing in Touching is he's editing literally frame by frame. So it's one still photograph after another going by at 24 frames a second. You get a lot of frames of pure color, a frame of purple, followed by a frame of green, followed by a frame of yellow. Maybe five or six frames in a row of one color, which goes by in a third of a second, a quarter of a second. It also could be described as a flicker film because of the visceral flicker nature of the activity, lights going on and off. Part of the imagery of the film is a man holding a pair of scissors up to his tongue. Okay, it's just sort of an image that's there. Nothing really happens with that. It's just sort of, you know, it's images that go by very quickly. He's photographed in negative, then he's photographed in positive. All these things, alternating frames, go by extremely quickly. And so it's a visceral experience. Then you have the soundtrack to Touching, which is nothing more than the word destroy repeated over and over as sort of a mantra. That in itself, of course, an obvious allusion to violence. But what happens with the film is very interesting because as you hear that word over and over, you begin to hear different words. You begin to hear things that are not possibly there. Just as with a flicker film visually, you see things that are not there on the screen because your eyes are exhausted. That's part of what flicker does, is it exhausts your eyes because there's too much information to take in, there's too much flickering light for you to take in. And because of your visual exhaustion, you begin to manufacture visual phenomena in your mind that's not on the screen. Just as with the soundtrack, you manufacture in your mind's ear words you're not actually hearing. it's an abstract film. And unlike Gimme Shelter, which actually depicts a very brutal act of violence at the Rolling Stones concert in the audience, this is more of an allusion to violence. It happens on the second half of the program where I've got the Turn, Turn, Turn film and Judd Yakut's film on Yayoi Kusama, mm-hmm. which I should talk about, I guess, if there's time. Mm-hmm. But all of those films are more or less about the subject of obliteration, which was very much in the air at the time. The sort of ego obliteration of the psychedelic experience, mm-hmm. The sense of annihilation or even nihilism that people had. About the war, about protest, a sense of even desperation, but then there's a spiritual side to that as well. Mm-hmm. That this was also about a spiritual quest of sort of an egolessness. Okay, and so going back to what you said about Gimme Shelter, mm-hmm. which is a film that really shows disintegration. Mm-hmm. I think that there's in a film like Touching, there's a little more room for, I don't know, hope, I guess I would say. Yeah. You know, it's kind of got both things going on to me in a really fascinating way.
And that's, clearly I'm too young, I didn't live through that era, but mm-hmm. what always fascinates me about that time period is the juxtaposition of the sort of boundless idealism and the just total despair and hopelessness all going on at once.
It's very true, yeah, and that fascinates me too. It was a very frightening time, mm-hmm. clearly, and yet a lot of the imagery we see of it is people having fun, or people, or we think of the great music, you know. Mm-hmm. So it seems that both things were very intense then.
So the other film that we have plenty of time to talk about all the films. Mm. So if you want to talk about the other one.
Yeah, that's another film by Judd Yakut. Judd Yakut is still very active. He was a filmmaker in the 60s, but he started with a group called the USCO, USCO, mm-hmm. the USCO, and they were one of the very first multimedia art collectives. So they were involved in doing light shows in galleries, they were involved in projections, things like that. He sort of struck out on his own as a filmmaker. He was very, I think, gregarious and ended up collaborating with lots of people, including extended collaborations with Nam June Paik and Yayoi Kusama, who is the subject of this film on the program called Kusama's Self-Obliteration. So Judd Yakut documented a performance by Kusama and also went out into the woods in, I think, upstate New York with Kusama, where she painted in nature. She's very fixated on polka dots. And so putting dots on things. So you see her putting dots on animals, on trees, on herself, in water. Very, very, it's an extremely elegiac film in some ways. It's very beautiful imagery. And then it sort of morphs into a performance, which she did in a New York art space, which is... I'm really glad I was able to show this film because it gets across so much of the sort of wild spirit of especially arts, the art scene at that time. It's both bizarre and funny. There's a lot of humor to it. There's a great amount of obviously sexual freedom in it, because that's a major theme in Yayoi Kusama's work. The film itself has some explicit moments, but really it just gets across the sort of wild energy of the art scene of that time. It's one of those films that can be called epic despite its length. Mm-hmm. It's only 24 minutes. A lot of experimental films can be called epic and still be very short. Yeah. So I'm very excited to show that one. That one's showing in the Whitney program also, and so we got a special sort of DVD, additional DVD copy burned by Mr. Yalkut himself. So I'm grateful to him for providing that.
Well, that sort of brings me to something I've been curious about. How and where do you go about finding all these films?
Yeah, it's a fascinating process. What happens usually, the trajectory of this sort of thing, is that I'll read about a film or a filmmaker and think, you know, I've just got to see this. Case in point is a guy named Robert Nelson. He's not on this show, but I'm showing him soon at iDream. And they were restoring his films. They were from the 60s. And so the guy who was restoring sent out an email saying, I'm looking for any copies anyone might have of the following films. Hot Leatherette, 60 Lazy Dogs, Plastic Haircut, and on and on and on.
I want to see those.
I want to see all of those, yeah. I mean, just grabbing titles right there.
Immediately, right? And so, gosh, it was 3 or 4 years ago, and now the films are restored, and they're out there, and so you know, we're going to show them. But that's what happens. And so you read about something which piques your interest for one reason or another, and I think, okay, gosh, I've just got to see that. And it turns out, well, no, it never got put out on DVD. Have to show the print. You know, this is how I got into film projection in the first place. I wanted to show Pull My Daisy, which is a... beat era film. It's got Ginsberg and it's got Corso and Kerouac narrating. I thought, oh, it would be so much fun to see that. Couldn't find it anywhere. Oh, I have to rent the film. And renting doesn't mean go to the video store and pay $3. It means you call up the museum of, in this case, the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston, Texas, who have the rights and the prints, and you get a 16 millimeter film print. And, you know, it costs $100 to show that film. I said, oh, yeah, I got some money showed up, you know, saved up. The film's only a half hour. What else can I show? So you go looking. And, oh, there's another film on Kerouac. Okay. So with $250 and some borrowed projectors, put on a show at iDrum. And you just, the more reading you do, the more you find out about it. That was it. I had to learn projection from scratch. There's no projector school anymore. You know, you just got to take advice from people, treat the film prints carefully, and you know, rent the prints and do it. I part of this, what I hope will be the effect of any film screenings I do, is that people will be inspired to do this themselves, mm-hmm. and that we'll have more of it going on in Atlanta.
That's something that I've noticed, when you were looking for public records, for example, you get to Google and you get this sense that everything's everywhere and it's easy to find now, but there's so, so much that's just sitting on microfilm in city halls and in the case of public records and
exactly
films
right.
that are in attics and aren't anywhere else.
Information that's just in people's heads.
That's exactly yeah. right, yeah.
And that's one of the things we sort of try to advocate is to... get those stories down somewhere where people will be able to find them later.
Yes. And it's so interesting, I think, with the advent of Google, for example, people become aware of, I mean, when people Google something and they realize it's not there.
Yeah.
It's not there on Google. Now what? And then people, you know.
Plenty of those moments.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then people become really interested in tracking things down, you know. And people become aware that, oh, you know, gosh, this needs to be documented more. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should do that. And yeah. So part of what I do with the film series is for some of the films that are even less documented than others, I have a website which is frequentsmallmeals.com. And among other activities, music and art and so forth, I do have the Film Love series archives there, complete with notes on the various programs I've done. And part of the reason of that is the fact that these films are not very well documented. And so hopefully people who want to show them will be encouraged to do so. So now when you Google certain films, they will show up. And there will be a description of what's in them, which I have always found helpful when I was researching.
Well, do you want to talk a little more about just the Film Love series in general? What other kinds of things you've done and what you plan to do?
Oh, yeah. There are so many plans. Film Love started in early 2003 with a series on Beat Cinema. We are on our... Well, we've done nearly 50 programs in that time. So the Summer of Love program will be, right, the 45th program that we've done. And the idea behind the film series is to give access to audiences, to give audiences access to rare films, films that are important or that are great, but which simply don't exist on DVD or just aren't that readily available. So that's the whole idea of it. And along with that, to sort of increase awareness of showing film on film. And the history, this extremely rich history of experimental and avant-garde film that has been happening since the very beginning of cinema, with going back to the Lumières, you know, in Lyon, and, you know, doing their one-minute actualité films, you know, which we can look at now and see were very sort of experimental in nature. So since the beginning of cinema, there's been just sort of a parallel history of experimental and avant-garde film movements, which goes right along with the traditions we're more used to seeing. So I guess if I have a mission, it's to raise consciousness of that and to have fun watching these films, these extraordinary films, and in some cases, extraordinarily funny and engaging films with a room full of people, which really it's a great, great experience for me to be able to have a room full of people watching some of these films and the visceral effect it can have on an audience. It's
really fun. The show we went to last night wasn't Summer of Love, it was the Film Gates.
The AV
Gates.
Uh-huh.
I haven't laughed that hard in a long time.
No, I hadn't either.
Oh my God.
Just brilliant stuff.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was Skip Elsheimer who founded AV Geeks and put together that program. He did an extraordinary job. Yeah.
I still find myself humming Shake Hands with Danger.
Yes.
I was up on a ladder right before I came over here. And I was humming it, so she can attest.
Yeah, extraordinary film, huh, too, right?
It's good, too. That was
yes.
It was good.
I mean, you can get, you know, you can have fun with the kitsch of it all. But watching Shake Hands with Danger, which...
You learn something.
Yeah. And for people who don't know the film, it's an industrial film made in, I think, 1980 strictly for people who work on heavy equipment.
Caterpillars.
It was made by the Caterpillar Company. And it's strictly for those people, not really meant to be seen by anybody else, but it's an extraordinary film. And as I was watching it, I realized, okay, this is funny on a kitschy level, but it's also really interesting on a formal level as a film.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen another film put together in this way.
I hadn't either.
So, it's great work that Skip is doing. you know, bringing these things back so we can look at them now. I would say, I would just say, you know, some examples of other things we've done in the series. I'm in the midst of an extended program of Andy Warhol films, particularly the films which to this day are not available on DVD, his very early films, minimalist films, and factory films, which were so influential on so many filmmakers at the time and yet are not seen at all now. So we're showing those as the year goes on. We've had a couple of Atlanta premieres this year of Atlanta artist films, like Nicholas Vollmer's wonderful film on his father and his son, made in Maine, on the coast of Maine. We did a series in conjunction with Atlanta Celebrates Photography for the past 2 years, so we've been able to do extended series on themes like the use of light in film or home movies and artist films. This year, I'm curating once again the Atlanta Celebrates Photography film series, and we're going to be looking at a couple of things, which is films in films about art in public space. So showing the wonderful artist Gordon Mata Clark and his cuts that he made in abandoned buildings, and also some Atlanta artists who have done some very subversive, I think, and wonderful work in public spaces. And then another series I'm doing for ACP will be on the idea of still photography and motion pictures. So that's an example of something coming up that I'm really excited about. But once again, please go to the archives at frequentsmallmeals.com. Check out the programs if you're interested at all in any type of film that is sort of out of the mainstream. Consider coming to iDrum for the shows, because I've had a great time programming them and seeing audience reactions to them. It's really been gratifying.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for talking.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.